Welcome to the Messiah Podcast, where we talk about the issues of personal finance, investment, and entrepreneurship. So today we're going to be talking about exploring the morality of wealth. So the rhetorical question is being rich inherently evil? So in the Bible, the book of Proverbs chapter 23, verse 7 says, "As a man thinks in his heart, so is he." The King James Version says, "As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he." So what does the verse mean? It means that one's thoughts and inner beliefs are going to reflect on the attitude and the actions. Your inner thoughts and beliefs are going to be reflected upon in your actions and your attitude. And eventually your actions and your attitude are going to influence your life habits and the results in your life. So to rephrase and oversimplify this, if you perceive yourself to be a loser, you're going to live like a loser, carry yourself like a loser, and the results of your life are likely not to be great. And the opposite is also true. So I saw a very interesting research study conducted by Pew Research Center on the internet. So this study here showed the percentage of household income per religious group or religious faction in the United States. So for example, it would show for each religious group the percentage within that group that had a household income below $30,000 per annum in the United States. It would show between $30,000 and $50,000, between about $50,000 and $100,000. And it also showed the percentage that had a household income above $100,000. In the United States economy, if you have a household income of over $100,000, you're classified as upper middle class, right? It is true that even within the United States economy, life costs do vary by state and by city. So for example, if you look at the East Coast and the West Coast, you look at the likes of San Francisco, the likes of New York, life costs are way more expensive than a lot of cities in the Midwest. For example, some cities in the state like Iowa. So obviously this study was pretty detailed, but I kind of analyzed a few groups for the sake of this discussion. I looked at the Jehovah's Witnesses. I looked at the Buddhists. I've looked at the different factions within Christianity, and I also looked at the Jewish people. And as I looked at these four groups, I did see that there's a very high correlation between the belief system of each of the groups, as well as the breakdown of the household income. To oversimplify the study, I didn't look at all the income brackets. I looked mostly at the percentage of people in each group that had household incomes above $100,000. So let's start with the Jehovah's Witnesses. What do Jehovah's Witnesses believe about money? They believe that when you embrace the religion, you ought to prioritize spiritual matters over material matters. They believe in living simple and modest lifestyles. So I would assume that means, you know, wearing simple attire, driving a simple car, modest looking car, you know, a simple and modest lifestyle. That's what they value. They avoid attachment to material possessions. So they're not a very materialistic person. And they also believe in financial integrity and giving generosity. Those are very good values because, I mean, when you're involved in business activity and stuff like that, it's always good to have integrity. Good for business, it's good for your reputation, and it's just good for society too. You don't want to be dealing with a bunch of crooks. So from the Jehovah's Witness population in the U.S., only 4% of them have a household income over $100,000. So this is the religious group with the lowest percentage of people above the upper middle class income in the United States. So we can see here that to a high extent, their beliefs about money and the worldview influence, you know, their outcome. They're pretty much like the poorest religious group. The second group that I looked at are the Buddhists. This is quite interesting. What do the Buddhists believe about money and material possessions? They believe in detachment from material possessions, right? So it's almost like they equate material possessions to evil. They believe in what is called the middle way. So the middle way means avoidance of extreme poverty. The extremity of believing that extreme poverty is a good thing. At the same time, they avoid excessive attachment to material possessions. So that's like a middle way, sort of like a balance. They believe in giving and generosity, which is also a good thing. It's good to be generous. They kind of like correlate karma and wealth. So it's like the wealth that you have is sort of the result of the good or bad that you have done. And they also believe in renunciation. And that's kind of reflected upon in the lifestyle of the Buddhist monks and nuns. You know, they totally detach themselves from material possessions. They even refrain from certain sexual lifestyles. It's like total detachment, right? From the Buddhist population in the United States, I see that only 13% have a household income of $100,000 or above that, right? So that's not a very high percentage. Again, we see a very high correlation between their beliefs, their worldviews, and the financial outcome. Actually, a really classical example of this that is sort of an anomaly was the late Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs was known to be a Buddhist. If you actually check out documentaries and books about his life, you read that early on in his career, he used to walk around barefoot. Before he established Apple, he used to work for a video game company called Atari. He was known for walking around barefoot. He believed in not bathing regularly, and he believed that if you ate a lot of fruit and apples without bathing, it wouldn't be an issue. But, you know, records do tell us the opposite. There were a lot of complaints at his workplace about his hygiene. Sometimes he traveled to India and visit those Buddha temples and stuff like that. And later on in his career, I mean, he became like a millionaire, billionaire in his 20s, especially when Apple became a public company. Because when you go from private to public, the share prices explode when it's successful. And as a holder of a significant stake of shares, eventually a lot of people jump to millionaire, billionaire status. So even though he was a very wealthy person, you could actually see from the way he carried himself that he didn't seem to be a very materialistic person. Even though like he lived in a nice house and stuff like that, there were perks that he could afford, but he didn't seem to be driven primarily by money. I mean, he'd wear his turtlenecks, wear simple sneakers and jeans during the presentations of like new Apple products. And I've heard him actually say in numerous interviews that he wasn't driven by money. Money didn't really matter. He became a millionaire, billionaire in his 20s, but that wasn't what drove him. He was really driven by actually designing, you know, fantastic products that would really impact the world. He was driven by the idea of creating a dent in the world. It's very evident that he was successful at doing that. The other religious group that the study looks at is Christianity. And that happens to be the group that I'm part of. I'm a born-again Christian myself. You know, worldwide, you know, Christianity just has so many factions and denominations. Different denominations have different beliefs. So, for example, within Christianity, you do find that the views regarding material possessions do vary and differ. You do find that Christians vary in their beliefs on tithing and giving. They vary in other issues that are not money related, such as baptism, stuff like that. So for the sake of this, what are some of the differences? You do find some Christian movements that believe in tithing, that believe in giving a 10% of your income, whether it's your gross income or your net income, after tax income. They do differ on material possessions within Christianity. I have seen factions of movements that believe that material possessions is evil. They almost believe that. They almost equate, you know, poverty and financial struggle to high levels of spirituality. And they equate materialism to low levels of spirituality, as in it's not a good thing. I have seen other extremes within Christianity, what is known as a prosperity gospel. They almost directly correlate financial prosperity to your level of faith. So if you got a private jet, it means that your faith in God is on the high. You know, you're doing good. You're praying, you're tithing, you're fasting, you're obeying God. Therefore, God is giving you all that kind of stuff. If you're struggling financially, they flag that as, you know, lack of faith in God. The same is also true for stuff such as health. If you're sick, there's something wrong with your level of faith in God. But if you're healthy, you know, your faith in God is on a high. And that's not necessarily what I believe. But then you do find factions within Christianity that do have a more balanced view. They do believe in giving and being generous, but at the same time, they have a very pragmatic approach. The Bible does teach on being diligent, being hardworking. The Bible does say study to show yourself approved unto God. So valuing education is also a very good thing. So within Christianity, there are like so many factions and denominations in the study. So to oversimplify, I just selected a few. So the Baptist group in the United States, only 9% of them are above the $100,000 threshold. For Catholics, that's 19%. And the Presbyterians and Episcopalian had similar percentages of 35% and 36% above the $100,000 mark. I myself, I don't believe in the prosperity gospel. I don't believe in the poverty gospel either. I do believe in generosity. I do believe in tithing. I do believe that one needs to work very hard to prosper materially. The Bible does say that God gives us the ability to gain wealth. And, you know, the Bible does also say that money isn't necessarily evil, but the love of money is. And when you look at the teachings of Jesus and the kingdom of God, he really alludes to your usage of money being a reflection of where your heart is. Wherever you put your treasure, that's where your heart is. For example, according to Jesus, if you put a lot of your money and invest in a lot of kingdom-related matters, matters related to the kingdom of God, matters related to the house of God, it shows that that's where your heart is. if you invest a lot of your money in material possessions, that's also a reflection of where your heart is, just to oversimplify. And then what really impressed me in the study is that the Jewish people in the United States are the people with the highest percentage of the population above the $100,000 mark. And that's a striking 44%. So what do the Jewish people believe? The Jewish people believe in tithing. They believe in being generous to the affairs of God in the synagogue. Jewish people believe in saving money. They believe in investing money. So there's a balance between saving and investing. And there is a difference because, I mean, saving is just putting money aside for a rainy day and for whatever future purpose you have. And investing is putting your money to work for you. These people believe in charity. So they believe in giving money to orphans, giving money to widows, to the poor, to the struggling. And if you read the Bible, you do see that God has a heart for the widows. He has a heart for the poor. He has a heart for orphans. And, you know, the Bible does allude to God rewarding people who financially support that group of underprivileged people. And you really touch his heart when you do that. On the other hand, God is very adverse to people who oppress that very same group of people. The Jewish people believe in education and reading books. They believe in wisdom. A lot of wisdom comes from, you know, reading the Bible, reading Jewish traditional books, reading books in general, especially nonfiction books that contains a lot of substance and a lot of knowledge that can help you get ahead in life. They believe in reading a lot of books as well as education. The Bible even talks about studying to show yourself to prove unto God. That's a biblical principle in the New Testament. You know, the Old Testament does kind of encourage the same principle. The Jews have a very strong entrepreneurial tradition. A lot of them believe in, you know, creating solutions in a way that will create employment. That is entrepreneurship. Allocating resources to create solutions that can make people's lives better. And as a result, people are going to pay for that service. When you look at the United States economy, there's a very high percentage of people in the Fortune, top 100, top whatever, 500 millionaires, billionaires who are Jewish people. For example, I'm a very big basketball fan, and I've noticed that a significant portion of basketball owners are Jewish people. Mark Cuban, who owns the Dallas Mavericks, seems to be a very good guy. He's a Jewish guy and he's very wealthy. He's a billionaire. Steve Ballmer, the former CEO of Microsoft, he's the owner of the LA Clippers. He's also a Jewish person. A year or two ago, there was the announcement of Michael Jordan's sell down of the stake of the Charlotte Hornets, the team that he owns. It was sold, I believe, to a Jewish family too. When you look at the tech world, some of the wealthiest guys in the world, Mark Zuckerberg has a Jewish background. Larry Page, Sergey Brin, they're also Jewish people. The Jewish people believe in community. You know, when you look at biblical history, when you look at the history of Jewish persecution in the likes of Germany in the days of Hitler, you do see that the Jewish people do prosper a lot due to community. So within the Jewish community, if someone sells, let's say, tomatoes or apples at a price that is slightly higher than their competitor outside the community at a lower quality, because of their community principles, the Jewish people are going to buy apples from that guy, and they're not going to buy cheaper apples from someone else. As a result, money really circulates within the community. The reality is, you know, I have heard very respectable Jewish leaders such as Daniel Lapin saying that, you know, he's aware that people outside the community have a perception that everyone in the community is completely aligned and always in agreement. The reality is there are disagreements within the Jewish community like any other. It's just that despite that, they do hold on to this community principle. You know, strong community doesn't necessarily mean that everybody within the community agrees with each other 100% on everything. It just means that despite their differences, they do stick together, and that really helps them prosper. They believe in hard work. They believe in having strong work ethic. All these factors contributing to them being a very prosperous group. So back to the original question, is being rich inherently evil? I'm going to answer based on my Christian worldview. The simple answer to that is no, right? The book of 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10 says that the love of money is a root of evil, not the root of evil. So money is just money. But when you love it too much, it can lead to evil, right? When you look at a lot of the political conflict, when you look at a lot of the crime that happens around the world, a lot of the illicit activity, it's really driven by the love of money. It's people who are willing to, I won't even say sacrifice the moral standards, because they might not have very moral standards, but they're willing to do very immoral, evil, or even hurtful things or illegal things to have access to money. They'd rather have a very immoral lifestyle and a lot of money than be morally corrupt and have a more modest lifestyle, right? That's an example of how the love of money can drive and cause people to do evil things and drive them to do very evil things. So the love of money is the root of all evil, but the money in itself is not evil. So having a lot of it doesn't make you an evil person, as long as your heart's in the right place and you got the right values. Number two, I do really believe in generosity. You know, if you have a lot of money and you're a generous person, you got good values, your heart's in the right place, you can actually do a lot of good with that. When you look at, for example, what the Democratic Party tends to do, they tend to have a lot of social programs in the United States. And a lot of the money that taxpayers have are used to help a lot of underprivileged groups, right? That's an example. I personally don't really have a very strong Democratic or left-wing beliefs. That is something that I do acknowledge that they do. Within my community, within my neighborhood, I do see people that do benefit from different government programs as a result of the generosity. That's just an example. I've also seen religious groups also serve communities being generous towards them with a lot of the money and resources that they have. And the third point I'd like to raise is that a lot of people think that money changes them. But the reality is money makes you more of who you really are, right? So if you're a jerk, money is just going to make you a bigger jerk. If you're a generous person, money is going to make you way more generous, because if you had a household income like $50,000 and you gave what you could to the community, to the poor, to the church, or to whatever organization, if you give $100 million to that very same person, a very significant portion is going to be given. You know, people are going to benefit and the community is going to benefit more from that person's generosity. I hope this really blessed you. So please do like, share, subscribe, follow, you know, tell your friends about this and let us know your thoughts. Take care. I was a lost soul, just looking for a life to live. But nothing came close to the freedom I found today. Now I'm trying to go hard, so I can tell the world about his love. Get him all to trust God, cause pretty soon the gate is closing up.